Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. Remember, I'm only as hip as my guests are. We have a great show today with the very talented, you know him from Reno 911. He's done a ton of voice work. We have Carlos Alazraki. We're doing the East Coast shout out, the drink of the week. And I got to tell you something about, you know, Carlos called me before he came on the show today. And it's the professionalism, which you kids listening should know what professionalism is. It's called confirming stuff. And you know what I'm talking about, you kids in your skinny jeans, which it's skinny jeans. I hate them. The skinny jeans are so gross. You know, they make your legs look like asparagus, okay? Basically, there's the only difference between skinny jeans and tight Sergio Valentes is the Guido in them, okay? I mean, I swear to God, I think Z Cavaricci should come out with some skinny jeans. But, you know, I book my guests here, and I try to get you guys good guests, and I always go overboard and try to get them. And Carlos knew some people I knew, and I hit him up on Facebook, because I do that a lot of times. I hit my guests up on Facebook, because I don't know them. And I said, hey, you know, this guy's good. This guy's a funny guy. We know the same people, so let's do it. And I got to tell you, I get my guests and I say, I don't know some of these people, and they come in, and it's a little scary for me to sit there and interview people I don't know, and they're of a good stature and, you know, have some success, not like me doing a show in Burbank. But what's amazing is I don't know if they're coming in sometimes. I sit there and I send them a message and I wait, and sometimes they're 5 minutes late, and I sit here and I'm freaking out in the studio because what if they don't show up? Then it's, you're going to listen to me babbling and ranting for, you know, an hour. But Carlos was so professional. He actually called me today. And it's funny because he called. And usually if I get a call from a number, I don't know. I don't pick it up. But I picked it up today just because it was an 818. And he said, hey, Steve, it's Carlos. And so that's professional. That's what I'm talking about, people. So kids, be professional. Okay? Eat your vegetables. Go to school. Love Hulk Hogan. And be professional because, you know what? If you're professional, things will come back to you. Anyway, we're going to play a great song right here. We have Carlos coming on and right after the song. But right now we have Blackbone Child. You're going to see him. We'll be back with Carlos Alazraki.
Nice.
You feel the drip of the sweat running down your neck. You want to run, but you can't run quite just yet. If your pretty face has gone too
That's Blackbone Child with You're Gonna See. And we're here with Carlos Alessandri. How you doing, Carlos?
I'm doing well. I overheard you saying you're only as hip as your guest, and I just bought a Kia Sorento.
Okay, so. See that?
If big old wagon.
But you're expecting, Siri. So
we're expecting.
If you're a single guy driving around a minivan without windows, we'd be worried about you.
Hey, ladies, I'm nesting. Yeah, I have done nested. The eggs are in the basket, and it's she's ready to pop. I got the phone on vibrate, and I got like a couple of things coming up. I got like a table read at Pixar coming up for Planes 2. I'm plugging right away. You got to plug right away, my friend.
Plugging.
You know, you got to plug these things.
Let me explain. If people don't know who Carlos is, he played Garcia in Reno 911, and he's... He's got honestly, you people know. I always check my IMDb. I was reading it's like 4 pages of voice work he's done. I'm going, holy crap! Fairly Odd Parents, Chowder, Happy Feet, Camp Lazlo, Squirrel Boy, Handy Manny, which I don't know, but it sounds perverted.
It's so good for the kids. It's a kids thing. It's not perverted.
But it's handy. And yeah. SpongeBob.
He does work for free.
And you were the
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Is that amazing? It's funny because it's. He knows a friend of mine, Tim Gleason, and they did a benefit.
Phantom of the Opera.
We're going to talk about it. Yeah,
Tony La Russa.
Yeah, and it's funny because people. I mean, people. If you walk down the street, people don't know that's you. But that commercial was so. It made Chihuahuas popular, and I hate Chihuahuas.
Before the Aflac Duck was iconoclastic, there was the Taco Bell dog, and on the most recent auditions and callbacks for the new Aflac Duck, of which they specifically said we do not want the same voice. Something completely different. I just went and went, Aflac.
And they
said, what the hell? I'll give it a shot. But, of course, they went with the same voice.
Did they? Because I know
it was
some guy from Minnesota. Who
yeah,
was like
congratulations.
That.
But, yeah, I was the Taco Bell dog. It was so weird. You
now,
know?
How was there a lot of, I mean, first of all, I mean, did you just sit there? I mean, because you do, you're talented. I mean, I'm sure when you started stand-up, you know, and you still do stand-up. Did you do impressions on stage?
Yeah, well, I did. I kind of weave them in. I always, like, if I have a Dr. Phil bit or an American Idol bit, I'll say Idol blows. I don't like the judges. I miss Simon because he was so freaking. You know, if you sang that song like you just did now, I would have to say that Jesus did not die. He ran behind that giant rock for 3 days to get away from your horrible singing. So kind of work it into the POV about how I feel about something, as opposed to, hey, what would it be if Barney the dinosaur were a cop? Say you're arrested or something. I like you, get my squad. So I try not to, you know, announce it. I just kind of weave it into the stand-up.
See, that's cool, because I always cracked up with, and we used to crack up in Philadelphia about it, it was... You get an impressionist doing the Jack Nicholson impression.
Yeah, and
The hair. But then it'd be like a black guy. And it's like, you don't have to do the hair because you don't look like Jack Nicholson.
We've already suspended our belief.
Seen it. Yeah. So the Taco Bell, how did you, I mean, there was an audition. And they said,
there's an audition.
And how did you find that voice? Was it a voice you had done in like a TV show before, or was it something that?
You know, I give credit to Terry Berland. She's a casting director that had heard a bunch of, yo quiero Taco Bell, you know, Chihuahua, little voices. And I started to kind of chime in on the same thing. She's like, nah, I've been hearing a ton of that. So just use your own voice or something. I'm like, all right, yo quiero Taco Bell. Maybe a little bit deeper. Yo quiero Taco Bell. Oh, God, what a waste of time. I got to drive back. Oh, got to go over to the hill. Got to go over to 405. What a stupid waste of time. And then I booked the call back, and then I booked a little promo. They've just made a promo. I went in. I saw the video, and I went, oh, the video looks good. Yo quiero Taco Bell. And they go, oh, yeah, we're going to make a commercial from the demo. You got a commercial. Oh, yeah, I got a paycheck. And then, woo.
I mean, that ran for, I mean, you must have changed out of that.
About 3 years. Yeah.
Damn.
No Aflac Duck, but...
Yeah, well, the Aflac, I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, Gilbert screwed it up. I mean,
it's a morality clause. You know, somebody should be allowed to make jokes, but I guess if you have a clause, you got a clause.
Right.
There's a clause.
Exactly. So what made you get into stand-up? I always ask my guests that. You started out in San Francisco, which people, he's a giant, and you know I'm a diehard. I'm actually wearing
Giants.
A Philly shirt,
and
I know, and he's a Giant, and they kicked
gear.
Their ass.
Could have worn it. Damn
I know, it would have been crazy, Giants and Phillies. But I we were talking about this earlier. I don't mind that the Giants beat the Phillies. If it was the Mets, I mean, I would rather Mets to me. The Mets and the Braves are like the Dallas Cowboys. Because you know how many
that's right.
That I hate them. I was talking to a guy last night at a bar, and I said, I can meet the most beautiful woman in the world who could be worth millions and millions of dollars,
no.
And if she was a Cowboy fan, I would not date her.
You'd
and my
her.
Friend's like, you're like, yeah, right. You know, I said, no, you don't understand, because that would be in some inkling that. my kid might want to become a Cowboys fan. And if my kid became a Cowboys fan, I'd have to, I sell them on eBay for like $40,000.
Spawn of Satan.
Exactly.
Spawn of Satan. But you, how can you hate them? You got to feel sorry for the Mets. I can understand hating.
I don't feel sorry for the Mets. They're New York. They have all this money. They have all this money. They have all this
so
money.
Sad.
Oh, because they invested bad. They should have been investing their money with Bernie Madoff anyway. You're a team. It's like, and they should get Mark Cuban to own them, but they won't because Cuban said he's not going to buy a team unless that don't be kiss his ass a little bit. Cuban should buy the Dodgers.
Cuban should buy the Clippers. I'm a Clippers fan. Talk about
really?
Pain. Yeah. And I was on a plane. I was on a plane back to La Russa thing. I rode home on a plane with Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Bulls and the White Sox. And I was like, please buy the team. Buy the team. He's like, nah, I don't think Sterling's going to sell. Well, especially now that we got Blake Griffin. He's a marquee guy.
Griffin's
so.
A stud. But
come on, Dwight Howard. Come on, Dwight Howard.
Yeah, I think he'll go to the Lakers, though. I don't.
Unfortunately.
But you know what's amazing is about the Clippers is when you look back and it's like, and I'm basketball is my least favorite sport, but I love hockey. I love baseball. I love
hockey.
Football. But
Flyers
lost last night to the Bruins, which pisses me off. But the Clippers have had so many good draft choices, but then like Darius Miles, what happened to him? You know, it's like they have all these things, and everyone. And Sterling is just an insane lunatic.
Most notably, we can't afford to keep Zach Randolph. Look what he's doing in the playoffs.
It's insane. Is that insane?
No, we'll go to a garage sale and get a couple of scrubs.
Could you imagine if they had
do.
Some of those people with Blake Griffin and well, Byron Davis is fat and out of shape, but not Mo Williams. Mo Williams is a great
player. Mo Williams is a good fit, but if you kept that, and
Zach
now,
Randolph is amazing.
Now the premium in this year's college draft are power forwards. And, of course, we traded our draft away. We got rid of $28 million cap space, but that's what the Clipper fans say. We got so much cap space. We got so much cash space. Nobody wants to come here.
Exactly. Because Sterling was heckling Byron Davis. Like, you're fat. Why are you in the car? I'm like, you're the owner. You're not supposed to do that. I mean, it's
Billy Crystal sitting there going, I can't believe this. I can't take, you know, I did 700 Sundays, but I can't do another Clipper season. It's killing me.
That's fine. So back to that. See, people, you know, it's I love having talented people on my show because we just ramble. I mean, I don't have non-talented people on my show because if I did, I would just talk to the wall. I'd be talking to myself in a mirror with non-talented.
It's a very talented wall.
But, okay, so what made you get into comedy? Now, you started out in San Fran. Did you start out with, like, when Blaine Capash and Patton Oswalt were up
Before
there?
Before that, here's I started in Sacramento. I was going recreation administration thinking I'm going to be a cruise ship director, manage a health club, did my internships. Then I did mime with this professor. He says, why don't you do some mime? You're pretty talented. And that was kind of scary and freaky, but fun. Then I did a couple of stand-up comedy competitions. Then I got in a duo called The Brouhaha, me and a guy named Mark Fraser, who lives back in Alabama now.
Is he still doing comedy or no?
I don't know. He's still writing, still blogging.
So
and
you
stuff
guys,
like
you
that.
Guys, how, what was it like being, you wrote sketches? I mean,
we wrote sketches. We had like a sketch where William F. Buckley interviews Floyd the Barber from Andy Griffith on Central American Policy.
No, were you Floyd?
Yeah, I was Floyd.
Give us some Floyd.
What was it? Floyd, what do you think of the recent aid to the Nicaraguan world? Oh, yeah, Band-Aids. Hobie cut himself yesterday and I put a Band-Aid on him, Andy. No, Floyd, we're not talking about Band-Aids. We're talking about military aid. Oh, yeah, Kool-Aid. I love Kool-Aid. And then William
that's,
F. Buckley.
That's, yeah, that's why, though, see, that's why I love like impressionists like you. Because that's funny. You're creative. I mean, as you were saying, the impressionist goes, hey, here's my John Wayne. Oh, yeah, you big doggy or whatever. But you, that I mean, that's brilliant. Who has done William Buckley interviewing Floyd the Barber? First of all, that's great. Because it's so out there.
It's so surreal. Here's one that never worked, which is Pink Floyd the Barber. There is no pain. You are receding. Oh, distant ships walk on the horizon.
Oh, God, that's fun.
Thank you. My favorite one was we did Devo singing A White Christmas. He smoked pot. I didn't. And I guess maybe he came up with that with me. I'm dreaming of a very white Christmas.
See, yeah. I love something because it's funny in my act, and I'm now working on a one-man show because I'm not happy with my act, but it works. But I always do Jerry Lewis singing Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, that's
go,
great.
Foxy, lady. And then I do Jerry Lewis singing Kenny Rogers, lady. I do it like three times, and
lady.
People love it. But I hate it because people come up like I
green-eyed
I
was, lady.
Yeah, I should just go on like for 20 minutes today. But no, I was at Black Angus and I was watching a Phillies game, and this guy comes and goes, "Hey, I saw you at John Lewis Comedy Club." I go, "Oh, cool." He goes, "Yeah, you did that Jerry Lee Lewis bit." I'm like.
Jerry Lee.
I'm like, Jerry Lee. I'm like, I didn't marry my 14-year-old cousin.
No.
I do.
Lady.
But I'm just tired of it because like it's whenever I do shows, like the other night I stopped by, I did a guest set somewhere, and I didn't do the bit. And when I walked on stage, my friend who's a comic, Rick Escanta, he goes, dude, man, you didn't do Lady. I'm like, I don't want to do Lady. It's like you. It's like you. Like everywhere you go, people are like, oh, do the Taco Bell. You know, it's like.
Yeah, exactly. The other one that comes close to like being a setup is I do Schwarzenegger being really stoned and showing up at a karaoke comedy. We have to legalize marijuana in this country because I want to sing karaoke and I'm not too scared. Buffalo soldiers.
dreadlock with the rust in the hand. They look like the predators and they get down.
That's the only one that kind of comes close to Vegas-y type of style of impression that I do.
So how did you get into doing voice? I mean, okay, but we'll get back to how you, as you know, the show goes all over the place. We'll get back to how you got into comedy and things.
Sure.
But how did you get, I mean, it's like when you were little, were you doing impressions? Did you see something or did you watch Rich Little? Which Dennis Miller is one of his best jokes was he goes, I saw Richard Nixon, he does a Rich Little impression,
yes,
which always cracked me up. But did you watch impressions and go, I want to do that? Or because doing impressions is not easy. I mean, you really, and it's like, I mean, explain the process. Did you listen to yourself when you were doing them? Like an 8-year-old Carlos Alazraki.
8-year-old Carlos. It probably is the whole primordial ooze that I was spawned from was my parents being from Argentina, my best friend's parents being from Glasgow, Scotland. So if I wasn't at my house listening to Carlos No Me Digas, Hijo de una puta Carlo. I was listening to Carlo. Are you Kevin? Are you going outside there? Look at you, Carlos. You're growing by leaps and bounds every year. So voices were like, bang. I tuned into it, and then I watched TV. And I think the first impression I did when I was 8 or 9 was at the swim pool we used to hang out. We swam every day. And chlorine, no goggles, you kids today.
Exactly.
And it was Herman Munster. Lily, I won't.
that's just it was, as
Fred Gwynn.
Here's my Al Lewis. Hammond. I sort of look like
Hyman.
Alice.
Hyman. Al Lewis, that's right.
Give me a Paul Lynn.
Oh, I disagree. X marks the square.
Well, you know Don Friesen.
Oh, yeah, I know
Don. Don was on a few weeks ago, and he gave me, which it's just funny, because your stuff, yeah, I mean, they're great, the Buckley and stuff like that. But Don did a John Lithgow and a Charles Grodin. And I was just dying because like, people don't do that. And he's like, Cooper.
You know, Grodin. What's this one? I do Grodin from, what was it, Heartbreak Kid. No pecan pie. What do you mean there's no pecan pie? We drove all the way from Florida for that pecan pie. I want the pecan pie. Don't talk about 50 years. Don't do that. You're going to swell up. I told you you're going to swell up. The original Heartbreak Kid is really good.
Oh, it's great, yeah. And it's funny, though. I heard after that, he got, like, blackballed. Like, have you ever read his autobiography?
It would be so nice if you weren't here. Turned down The Graduate, apparently.
I know. And he said that he wasn't blessed, but he's like, he was friends with Robert Redford in New York.
Yeah.
And he said Robert Redford, like, opened up his closet. And it was another bedroom. He said that was the guy's, how blessed Redford was. But Grodin was really big. And then he did, I guess he did Candid Camera. He was after.
Oh, Grodin did.
No, Grodin was on Candid Camera.
Uh-huh.
And he, I guess, because Heartbreak Kid, he wanted more money. Or they labeled him that he was hard to work with.
Yeah.
Which is Midnight Run, I love. But do you know who originally was cast from Midnight Run?
Let me guess. Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah.
No.
Cher and Sylvester Stallone. No lie. And it was, and they turned it around, and then they got De Niro, and De Niro lobbied. He goes, and Charles Grodin makes that movie.
You've got to get this guy. See Grodin. Did you see Rosemary's Baby? The doctor that you thought was a nice guy turned out to be a bad guy. That's the guy I want. Rosemary's Baby. Very good actor. He was in Rosemary's Baby, Charles Grodin. So
it's
bizarre.
And it's funny because Rosemary's Baby is, I was born the day before Halloween.
La, 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 la.
And my mom's name is Rosemary, so it's always Rosemary's Baby. So I'm a little... See, this is God. So you're a kid. You start doing these voices.
Yeah. And so
how does it how do you develop? Do you go sit there and go? I mean, you have it's. I think voices are like music. You have to have a knack. Either you can do it or you can't.
Yeah.
Like,
you
I can joke around, but I can do like a Cat Stevens or you know, but I can't do like. And that, but did you practice a lot? Or
I guess so, because it was just by repetition, by watching TV. You know, everybody wanted to be, oh, my gosh, this is embarrassing. We all wanted to be Popeye or do the Pink Panther. No, dude, you do it like this. So, an ant, all they want's a lousy ant. That was our zeitgeist communication. You know, we would talk about cartoons, because all the kids in the 70s watched Bob Barker. When we stayed home from school, we'd come home and watch all these cartoons. And that's what we imitated, you know. Go, go, Gophers. Dave, Rocky, and Bullwinkle. So,
can you do me a Hong Kong Phooey?
Hong Kong Phooey? What?
Scatman Crothers.
Was it Scat? That's right. Hong Kong Phooey. Anybody home? Stay out of room 237. I do, Red Fox. I used to do a bit about, this is in the back of the book, Malcolm X, that there was a guy named Chicago Red and Detroit Red working in a Harlem nightclub as dishwashers. Detroit Red was, Chicago Red was Red Fox. He was from Chicago, had red hair. The other guy with red hair was Malcolm X. He was from Detroit, both working in a Harlem nightclub at the same time. If not for the hand of Allah, their fates might have switched. It would have been Malcolm and Son. I'm coming to join you, Elizabeth, by any means necessary. Meanwhile, in a mosque in Harlem, salami, bacon, and eggs. We ain't like that Christopher Colombo. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on Esther's face. Then she got ugly and scared the white people to Utah. Lamont, the big one. So,
okay,
bizarre ones.
We gotta play a quick song. When we come back, dude, you're making me die. Keep this up, because I love laughing. It's funny because I watched yesterday. I watched on HBO. It was on demand. It was comics talking funny, and it was with Ricky Gervais, Seinfeld.
Yeah, and I've got that recorded. And Rick Chris Rock.
Yeah, and it was just funny because you're making me laugh like they laugh. Because you know, in comics together, sometimes you just laugh. And it was great. And there's Louis C.K. is brilliant. They're all brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
But they're just him and Rock. I mean, Louis and Chris have known each other for so long. And they're just talking like how Seinfeld has never, even like, Louis said he was talking to Seinfeld on the phone. And Seinfeld even referred to it as the F word. He didn't say it. It's like Seinfeld never curses. Who? All these people. Do you know Gabe Abelson?
I know that name, yeah.
He was a comic out of New York, then he wrote for a bunch of TV. He used to do a bit, and he's some impressions. He always did a bit about the word hey. From Paul Reiser, Richard Lewis, and Jerry Seinfeld.
So, Paul Reiser's this guy. I had a show, two episodes, it's gone.
That show. Did you watch it? I thought it was funny.
I didn't see it. No, he's too old.
It was basically Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Was it?
I mean, Larry David was on. He goes, you should do a show like mine. Can you do Larry David?
Larry David? No, I can't. George Steinbrenner, on the side of the George, come in here. I need to talk to you right away. Who took my apology spot?
Okay. We're going to play a song, and we're coming back with and now I'm going to think of obscure impressions, because I know you know them all. How many impressions do you do?
I don't know.
Over 100? 200? 400? Well, 900? 4,300?
20 good, and then I do 150. Then my Johnny Carson is the same as Rich Little. Johnny Carson. Okay.
Okay, we're going to play a song by Big Onion called Nightmare. We're coming back with a very funny Carlos Alizraki, who's going to do some play, and he's going to sing more Devo. This is Big Onion, Nightmare.
Show me
That's Big Onion. Big Onion Nightmare. We're back with Carlos Alizaraki. Alizaraki. So Alizaraki. You're Argentinian.
My folks are from Argentina, yeah. The last name is Sephardic Jewish, and then Swiss, Italian, French, Basque. I'm a mutt.
Yeah, yeah. See, I'm English, German, Austrian, and Yugoslavian. I'm
nice. Yeah, we're Americans.
We're
American.
American. Okay, well, we'll go back to you and Fraser. Brian Fraser? No, what was your comedy partner's?
Oh, Mark Fraser.
Okay.
In Alabama.
So what were some other impressions you guys did?
God, we did Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. It was just a physical bit where I would take a plastic sub and turn it from side to side while he smacked against the stage from left to right. We did Richard Nixon pulling over Ronald Reagan on a traffic stop. And I can't remember what that was. You know where you're speeding? No, I don't. Maybe you can tell me how fast I was going.
You know what's scary about that, though? Now, like, we're over 40.
Yeah.
And so we remember Richard Nixon. Remember, and the funny thing is, even now, I mean, in all honesty, we knew Nixon more like when the Watergate thing happened, because back then, like in Philadelphia, there was Channel 3, 6, 10, 17, yeah. 20, 29, and 48, and 12, which was PBS, basically. But we didn't really watch that. But for some reason, 12 had Nova and then Benny Hill.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why. It's like the weirdest thing. But then, I mean, we grew up around it. But now it's like I talk to people who – I mean, it's not that we're more intelligent, because I'm not saying that, but yeah. I think we were more educated because we didn't have so many – things going on. Like I was talking to a girl one night, and I was talking to her, and she thought Philadelphia was a state.
Oh boy!
And I'm like,
Sarah Palin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you and Fraser did it. But how did you actually? When was your first time on stage? How old were you?
I'm gonna correct myself before that. First time I said you, the bit was actually Richard Nixon going to a zoo in front of a silverback gorilla, getting frustrated, and becoming more gorilla-like than the gorilla because he was trying to talk to the gorilla. So weird. Why are you making fun of me? Say something. Yeah, it was so weird. I played a silverback gorilla. I do a mean silverback. Ask Tom Wilson, fellow Philadelphian.
I didn't know he's from Philly.
He's from Philly, yeah.
He didn't, but he wasn't. Yeah.
He's a Philly comic.
I didn't know. He's a lot older then, because he must.
Yeah, Tom is, he's older than I am. I'll say that. I'll be nice, because, you know, Tom's a big guy.
Yeah. If you don't know, Tom was Biff in Back to the Future.
To the Future. Very nice guy. Still very funny. Very squeaky clean comic, but just hilarious.
I don't know. He's a Philly guy.
He's a Philly guy, yeah. Back with, Dom Marrera, okay, and all those guys.
Which is funny. The receptionist, the one who, her hair is lighter, that's Dom Marrera's her godfather.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's great. He probably has a joke about her, right? My freaking goddaughter. Just once I'd like to cup her on the breast. What's wrong with that? Does that make me a bad guy? I'm a godfather. Dumber. So I started, first time on stage was college, probably about 23, 24.
Oh, so you got an older.
Yeah, 6285. So yeah, 23, 24.
What gravitated you to going into comedy? Okay, so you started impressions when you were young. But were you always doing impressions, I think so.
I think my very first time on stage, Harry's Bar and Grill, December 84. So 23. I was 22 and a half. Harry's Bar and Grill, 4th and H, Sacramento, California, comedy competition. I started with Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. I'm Marlon Perkins, and Kermit the Frog here. It was really hacky. It was really bad.
Well, it's your first time. Yeah. Everyone's, you know,
it was all impressions.
And you have no idea what to do because it's your first time. And I remember, and it's funny, I remember the first time I was on stage, I was very nervous, and I had taken a learning annex class from, do you know Brian McKim and Tracy Skeen?
I don't know.
Married. He was on Last Comic Standing. They've been married forever. And they taught some. And the only reason I took the class was because I talked about, when I got out of college, I talked about doing stand-up. My mom said, well, how are you going to do it? And Stephen, how? And I always, this sounds nothing like my mom. Yeah. He doesn't sound like this. And my mom's a brilliant woman. And she said, Stephen, she goes, how are you, what are you going to do? And I really didn't go into Philadelphia a lot then, even though it was 10 miles away. And so I took a class in Philly, and I started doing comedy. My first night, I did okay, but it was like back then, like the open mics in Philly, it was basically come in to the Comedy Factory outlet, pick your name out of a hat, okay? And if you get one, but then later when I started being a working comic, you would get slotted. So you would always sit there and go, oh, wait, I'm 20, I'm 22nd, but wait, there's like seven people going on, and but that was for the working acts. And I remember sitting there, and there was a guy named George Sharp, and he sat there and he said, yeah, kid, you got to go on stage. You got to, you know, you just got to do it, you know, and he has real Northeast Philly.
Yeah.
And I went and it was scary. But then what's weird with comedy is you go from a point where you start, so you finally you get a crowd and you get that little confidence. But then you go back next week and you suck. And
oh, yeah.
You humble.
Life and death.
You're going, you do it great. You're like, yeah, I'm the, and you come out, yeah, like, oh, I should be doing
I'm
weekends here. Yeah. And then you go on the stage and it's like nothing. And then when you start working, you'll probably know this is when you start doing gigs. And I'm sure up in Sacramento and San Francisco, there was a lot of one-nighters back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
You could go on. But you would sit there and when you're new and you're getting paid for it, which is the difference between LA and every other place, is you get paid for these one-nighters. You know, it's not like, hey, we need 27 comics doing 3 minutes apiece for, you know, it was three acts. And you would go on. And I used to always sit there and I would stress out, like driving to the show because I was new. And I'd be like, okay, I hope there's people there. Because, you know, you've gone to places where it's like, and you're sitting there and you're stressed out going, I hope there's people there. And as you're driving, like, I want people there. And then you go, but what if there's people there and they don't like me? And it, you would do this whole, and now looking back, I mean, and you've been doing it forever. So you probably, well, people know you. So they come to see you.
Yeah.
But it's like, you probably like, screw it. If there's not going to be people there, I know I'm funny. Because, I mean, you're a national headliner and, you know, and you have TV credits. And you must be like not going and being arrogant, but being going and going, they're going to like me. And and you give 100%. And I think it's easier to give. I mean, we always give 100% when we go on stage. But it must be easier for you because you know they're there to see you. So I'm sure you're like, they're here to see me. I'm going to sit there and I want them to walk away going, we went to see Carlos Alzarakia, and it was amazing.
Yeah, you hopefully get that. You're never away from a hell gig, though. You're never away from a gig where people aren't going to listen, and it's not their fault. We did a food fair gig in Lancaster, a giant indoor, what must have been.
This is recently?
Yeah, probably a 40,000-square-foot room with food all around that people could try brownies, people could try stir-fry, barbecue chicken, and they're all picking at food. And there was these millions and millions of tables like somebody's huge wedding, and you have a stage where nobody's listening to you. They're all eating food and drinking wine and walking around, and you know, okay, they're not going to listen. It's not their fault. But right. I know I'm good. I'm just going to pick this table over here. This five. Ruthie, what are you drinking over there? I'm drinking red wine. Ruthie, are you driving? You know, you just play to the table that's listening to you, and you know it's not you. You're good. You've done it before, so you get in, you get out, you get your money, and you go home. And if I were to do that at the beginning of my career, it would have crushed me.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so weird. Like now, in the beginning, it's like you. I mean, I would sit there, and if I had a bad set, I would. It would destroy me.
Oh, yeah.
And now I sit there and I mean, I just got back into it, but I took a young guy, this kid Andy Dugan, to a show. We did O'Brien's in Santa Monica on a Sunday night. It was empty. And I would always stop by and do Andy's show every Thursday at Flappers if I was all, you know, going.
Yeah.
And when we were driving back, I said, Andy, drive me down. I'll get you in the show. And we were driving back and he goes, there's no one there and there was no one listening. He goes, and I had to follow you. And he goes, I always see you do good. He goes, you just, no one laughed on your set. Yeah. I go, I know. And I said, but that's, and I said, Andy, that's what you need to overcome because there's going to be nights like that. There's no one there. There's like some drunk girl like, you got married. And you're like, what the, you know.
We talked about it before.
I just did a drunk girl sounding like my mom. Like, you got married.
they're replaceable. But we talked about it before. It's like Matt Cain, the pitcher. You know, sometimes you don't get run support. You know you're a good pitcher. You got shelled today. You didn't have your good stuff.
It's weird because it's funny. It's because like with Cole Hamels, and I'm a Phillies fan. And Cole Hamels,
lefty.
The first, I mean, and he had a crappy year 2 years ago.
Yeah,
but
probably got off the juice.
Yeah, but yeah, probably. I think they're all in the juice. But it's not. But it's
HGH.
But then the first game of the season, he got lit up, and everyone's like, and thing about Philadelphia is, I mean, Philadelphia sports fans just like, oh, you know, oh, the Phillies suck. The Phillies suck.
Oh,
they didn't score. They lost to the Mets 2-1. But the Phillies suck, even though they have the best record in baseball besides Cleveland. But they suck. And that's the thing about Philadelphia fans. They're very hard. It's like the Flyers suck because they're down 2-0. They lost two games in Philly. But with Hamels, everyone's like, oh, Cole Hamels is done. He's done. Then the guy comes back and pitches like two gems. And it's like, oh, it's an old story. It's a typical Philadelphia fan. There was a guy named Nick Fatio who played hockey for the Rangers. Big goon. I'm like, Nicky, yelling when he played for the Rangers. Everyone hated him. Then all of a sudden he gets traded to the Flyers, and he's like, the mayor.
Nicky! Nicky, I got my kid's birthday party. Can you come over?
Yeah, that's it. So you were doing the comedy competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what made you, I mean, and you always knew you could do impressions. What made you sit there and bring it up a level where you do impressions like you do now? Was it somewhere in the middle where it's like, but I mean, you start off just doing impressions. Were you doing jokes too?
I think being in San Francisco and being formed by that kind of that kind of classic comedian, I started out in Sacramento doing all these impressions, and then I pulled it back because that was quote unquote the hacky thing to do in San Francisco. You didn't really want to do voices unless they were bizarre. And I reminded Dana Gould of this bit. He goes, oh, thanks for reminding me of a 22-year-old bit. But he did Barney Fife as Pontius Pilate. Bring me the one they call Christ. You know, if you did something that bizarre and way out there, it was kind of acceptable. But so I scale back on the impressions. And then when if I started to do a road gig or I started to get in trouble somewhere away from San Francisco or away from the hip crowds, I knew that I had something in my arsenal to win a crowd back. If you're doing... My big thing is, like, play to the audience you're playing that you're in front of. If somebody books you at a senior center or an older crowd, you don't have to do your hip stuff. I appreciate the Seller Silvermans and the Pattons and the Mark Marins, and they have their arsenal. But right. I try to have everything. If I'm going in front of a crowd that doesn't want that stuff, then I'll just do what they want to do because that's what I'm getting paid for. If I want to go do my hipper, more alternative stuff, then I'll do that in front of that crowd.
Right, okay.
I won't always be... I'm a snack pack. I'm a variety pack. You want Doritos this time? I got Doritos. That, to me, from a business acumen, makes sense. You know, you start to get over our 40s now, and I'm less worried about impressing people about how brilliant and dark and twisted I am. I've got that stuff. I'll pull it out when I need to, but I don't walk around in black clothes and goth and all that kind of stuff. I can throw a baseball. I'm sorry, I'm an athlete.
Can you do it? Can you do an emo impression of an emo?
I was sitting in a chair one day. I was on Hawaiian Airlines, and the roof blew off. Oh, well, there go my free peanuts.
No. Can do a Stephen Wright.
I went to my doctor today. He said my hand was fat. So I stopped shaking hands with him. I don't know, Stephen
If you could say your top three impressions you enjoy doing, who are they?
Well,
you go on stage, you're like, God, and it's like you look forward to.
One I'm proud of because I do all the merchandise for Mike Wazowski stuff, and I learned how to do it by watching Forget Paris 40 times in one weekend. It's all so doing Billy Crystal just off the bat, it just confuses people because you know that's a Jew voice. I know that's a Jew voice. I can't place who it is, and I just start doing it, and people catch on. So that's my favorite one because Billy Crystal's an impressionist, and who does an impressionist? I like doing that one a lot. I used to do Larry Bud Melman from the David Letterman show.
God, that's classic.
My opening bit was Larry Bud Melman singing I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters. I'm so excited, and I just can't hide it. I am about to lose control. That was one of my favorite ones. And then, who else? I like doing Chris Rock. I do Chris Rock in my act.
You know, I close my show with a Chris Rock impression, but everyone says I really don't sound like him, but it's just the act. And I always have you ever seen a brother eating guacamole? And I don't think I know lots of brothers never seen them eat the guacamole. And half the time people don't laugh. They don't get it. And one guy said to me, one comic, he goes, that's really racist. I go, how's that racist? And because a lot of comics are like, dude, Chris Rock. I'm like, I don't want to do it because crowds either they like it or they just look. And I go, never, ever, 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 ever seen a brother eat the guacamole. But it's like, do your Chris Rock, because I'm sure it's much better than mine.
But it comes in a world's piece that it does have an F-bomb, so I'll change it. You got to flush your freakish shit. You got to flush your shit. I don't want to see your shit unless your shit got titties on it. And you got to do the pacing and the smile and everything.
Yeah, because he always said, I go,
yeah.
Because they were talking about that on that show. They were saying how he repeats himself. He's like, I never seen a brother walking down the street with chicken. And then he'll go, have you ever seen a brother walking down the street with chicken? I walked down many streets, never seen a brother with chicken. And it just, but he goes, it's so redundant, but it's so funny because my whole setup is I go, if Chris Rock edited his act, it would go from an hour and 40
minutes.
It's
like a blues riff.
35 minutes.
He does his comedy like a blues riff. You know, I'm going downtown. Have you ever seen, have you ever seen a brother walking down the street? The funniest thing to me is the narration he does in Everybody Hates Chris, because the show itself is really subtle.
I like that show.
And then I'll see you tomorrow night, Kevin. All right. Or I'll see you tomorrow night, Chris. Okay, I guess I'll see you tomorrow night. I was so shy. I guess I blew that date. So pull back on that a little bit.
I like that show, though.
Yeah.
give me some. This is great. People, you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store. When I have fun, I have fun. And just this, I just... Comics crack me up, and I love. I mean, this thing, comics, when they hang out, it's a different thing. I mean, we don't. It's funny is when you sit there and if you're at a comedy club and like someone you know is on stage, you don't laugh at them. You don't. You're like, yeah, I've seen his act. Rarely, I've seen his act. Yeah. But when you sit down, I mean, I used to say like in Philadelphia, we used to always meet at the South Street Diner because back then there were so many clubs. There was Comedy Factory outlet. This is all the our Patty gigs around, and we would just like at on a Saturday at like 1:30 or 1 in the morning, we would just like, and probably the same in San Francisco.
Oh yeah,
we would just show up to a diner, and we talk crap on comics because comics are really little catty bitches, a lot of us.
Yeah.
But especially, but no, see, older comics though, are very cool. I think a lot of the younger comics right now are just little catty bitches. They're always like, they have an attitude. You say they're like, oh, I'm too hip for the room. It's like, you know, it's like I always say on Facebook, it cracks me up when people sit there every time they go, just rock the mic, just kill it. And I'm like, I was at that show. You didn't really kill.
You didn't.
And a good comic never says he killed. I mean, remember, do you remember a guy named Chris Rush? He was a bald. He's probably passed away by now. I found an album of his, and he's a bald guy. And some comics like I killed. And he said, yeah, you never kill. He goes, I killed once. He goes, you know what time I killed? It was when I saw a lady pee herself. He goes, that's killing. And he's right. Or if you get like standing ovations or applause breaks, that's killing. But now it's like, yeah, you got laughs for, well, first of all, 7 minutes. Oh, you got laughs for 7 minutes. But it wasn't like roaring laughs. It was an okay laugh. And I just laugh when it's always like, I rocked the mic, I killed him. Like, you didn't, you know, it's like,
back of the house, man.
Exactly. It's crazy.
It's fine. And I was always that kind of a critic of myself. People would. I had one guy, Rick Clay, my friend in San Francisco, was always the guy that I would turn to find out how my set went because comics could be fake. And I'm, dude, good set. Good set, man. It's freaking good. And you got a weird feeling about it. Good set. You know, it's a Texas League single, is what it was. And Rick would come and go, what happened with that one? I'd go, thank you. Thank you.
Exactly.
It's like Seinfeld. Thank you for being honest. No one will tell me the truth.
We got to play one song, and then we're going to come back with you, and we're going to plug where you're going to be, because you're performing a lot. We're going to talk about your upcoming events. I'm going to play the Ott Band, Do You Wanna, by the Ott Band, which is funny. There was a guy named Mark Ott who did comedy in Philly. And which
not
I want to
Mel
do,
Ott.
I got to do my, not Mel Ott, yeah, or Ed Ott. Remember Ed Ott played for he was a catcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he was like the grandson of Mel Ott. So they had Ed Ott and they had Dale Barron. They had all these people whose fathers or grandfathers are good, but these guys sucked.
Yeah. Mick Fox instead of...
Exactly. But we're going to play a song, The Ott Band. I just got to say, every week I give my obligatory Neil Bobel reference. Neil Bobel is alive and well. If you want him on my show, email me at Cooper, 925KYHY.com. Email me. And email me. Just tell me, you know, what guests you want to hear, you know, if you're having fun, Cooper at 925KYHY.com, Facebook.com/CooperTalk, Twitter.com/CooperTalk. And we'll be back with Carlos, and we're going to play the Ott Band, Do You Wanna?
That's it. Do you wanna? Dead air, ladies and gentlemen. Dead air.
That song just stopped. Wait, do you want to? Well, you know what? What is that? That is weird. How did that song stop?
I don't know. We were lost in the reverie of talking baseball.
I know. It usually goes. Now it stopped.
It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I'm like, yeah.
Damn you and your Ed Ott stories.
I know. No, I'll tell that story on air. It's funny. I was going when I was a kid. I go to Phillies games, and we're out. My parents take me down where the buses come out, and I remember Cesar Cedeno was a center fielder. He ran away. He wouldn't sign anyone's
Houston
autograph.
Houston Astros.
Yeah.
And Reds.
He wouldn't sign anyone's autograph. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to get Astros autographs, and these guys wouldn't sign. They wouldn't sign. So my mom turns to this older African-American lady, and she's like, I tell you. My mom's like, well, I'll do my mom's bad ways. Yeah. I tell you, these players, we pay their salary. They have such an attitude. All my son wants is an autograph. And I'm like, 9. And it turns out it was the guy, Larry Milbourne, from the Astros' mom.
Oh, wow.
So she goes, Larry, you come over here and sign this young boy's autograph.
Oh, that's
nice. I ended up getting, like, he took my you just buy the programs. He took them on air, and I don't know what happened to the song. That's irritating me.
That's weird.
But it's gone. But he signed a thing, which is funny because it's like, you know. But you're a big baseball fan.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So and you're a big.
That's great.
Who's your favorite Giant of all time?
Well, before the weirdest autographs I ever got was, Joe Rudy.
Joe Rudy, Oakland A's.
Ray Fosse and Monty Moore used to be the A's announcer. Monty Moore, Oakland A's baseball. My favorite Giant right now?
No, your favorite of all time.
Well, I saw Willie Mays at the tail end, but who watching them play, roids and all, watching Barry Bonds hit a home run into the bay was just Barry Bonds.
Bonds, you know, yeah. You know,
1999 Pittsburgh Pirates, pre-steroids, he's got the numbers to be Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you.
500 guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was amazing, but of course, you couldn't throw Sid Bream out at the plate.
No, bad left arm. Because too many roids got in the way.
But that's what he's a skinny little guy.
He was skinny.
I think that's why he started doing roids, because he said, I didn't throw Sid Bream out, because we all know Sid Bream is a fast runner. He's no Dave Concepcion.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
My favorite Giant would have been Robbie Thompson, the second baseman during the 1989, and Will Clark. I really like Will Clark's series against Mark Grace and the Cubs, 1989. Right. That was just amazing. So it would have been Will Clark. That was right around the formative years of me being in San Francisco. You know, I'd been living there for 2 years, and I would have to say that's the guy, yeah, Will Clark.
See, I remember going to a Phillies game and getting an autograph of John the Count of Montefusco. Yeah, and I remember
John the Count.
There, I got down, and my dad's friend had really good seats, and I was sitting there, and I still remember getting John, and my friend Steve Polinski, is like, hey, Coop, he's waving to Coop, and I said, come on down. So he came down and got Montefusco's. Anyway, people, it's time. I always do two quick segments.
Yes.
I always do the Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
And Drink. Give me a good voice sing like the drink of the week. Just do something. Give me something.
Oh, here you go. It's time for the drink of the week. Time to get your swally on. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the drink of the week.
And this drink is called the ABBA. I found it online. And it's a very strong.
Glug.
4 ounces of Absolute Citron.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 ounces of Sprite. Over ice with lime. It's called the ABBA.
Wow. Next week is Purple Drank.
Exactly. You drank with Jamarcus Russell. Yeah, what is that?
From Houston. It's from the Houston rap scene.
And you put codeine.
It's Dr. Pepper with codeine cough syrup and Apple Orchard candy cigarettes or Skittles.
Or Jolly Rancher.
Or Jolly Ranchers is what I'm saying, yeah.
It's weird.
And it's supposed to be just like, yeah, man.
But didn't some rapper die off that or something? I mean,
probably after gallons and buckets of it.
It's like, how do people come up with these drinks?
The economy, baby. You ever see Citizen Ruth and all the paint sniffers and all that kind of stuff?
Is it a documentary?
No, Citizen Ruth is Alexander Payne's, one of his first comedies, Sideways, About Smith, all that stuff. Citizen Ruth is Laura Dern. It's a great movie, but she's a paint sniffer. She pours paint onto a rag and just... and people pour STP on rags.
Oh, my God.
And they sniffed the STP.
This is no lie. The other night, I was out with friends. We were at Howl at the Moon, and my friend won a happy hour party. And we were in there, and this girl's walking around. I feel bad. This girl's dressed like a bumblebee, and she works there, and she's giving, like, these jello shots or whatever in a syringe.
Yeah, a surgical.
Yeah, and I was like, wow. And then I was cracking up. So we were a little buzzed, and then she put whipped cream on it. Well, when she wasn't looking, I go, watch this joke. And I did a whip it, which I haven't done a whip it in years. I went, and I took the nitro. I was like, and it hit you for like 2 minutes. I used to work at a restaurant when I was in high school. And when we would unload the trucks, all of us would hit the whipped cream. And it was so bad that then the waitresses would get them, and they'd go to shake it out, and it would just come out like liquid.
Got all the nitrous out of there.
But I did that. I said, we were just fucking around, screwing around. And we sat there, and my friend, as he tried to do it, he got caught by the girl. She's like, no.
But damn.
So what are your shows coming up? What's up?
Let's see, May 4th at Flappers Comedy Club. That is at 9 o'clock, I think. Nope. I think
it's main room?
You know, if you show up at 9, main room. Could be a 10 o'clock show, but show up at 9
and 10,
get something to eat. It's the latter show. It's the later show.
And it's called the Sketch Art.
It's called the Sketch Comedy Show, but it's a bunch of artists from the animation world and also the voiceover world. Greg Franklin, Matt Danner, Eric Bowser, myself, and a couple of others. You can check that out on Facebook. It's Wednesday night at Flappers. Then Downtown Comedy Club on the 6th and the 7th at 9 o'clock with Eric Bowser. Again, that's 114 South 5th Street.
I like that place. I play there every once in a while.
5th and Spring, I think it's 5th and Main.
It's between Spring and Main. It's it's right on 5th, and it pops out of nowhere. Have you
it's a pretty cool area. First time there.
It's you go on stage and you look and there's like a table with a plant and like these ugly pictures, but it's fun. It's a fun room. I used to play there a lot, and it's fun. But
yeah, I'll give it a shot. It's always kind of fun and kitschy, and I like that area. So I'll be there this weekend, and then and that's it for a while. Then we're getting ready for Baby to drop. Baby drops near May 18th. Yo, see you to Sinai. Be there. And so then I'll take a little time off and be a papa for a while.
Are you looking poopies. Forward to being? How long is this your first kid?
Yeah, first kid.
And how long have you been married?
Let's see, not even a year. So the baby might come on our anniversary, which is May 15th.
May 15th. You know what a May 15th is?
It's not tax day. I know
it's
that.
It's my mom's birthday.
Hey, look at that.
See that? So you're
that would be beautiful.
Rosemary Cooper, and it's I just know my mom, Rosemary Cooper. It's her birthday. It's May 15th.
As long as I don't see Ruth Gordon with a milkshake, drink your shake. It'll help you. Drink your shake.
give me some more impressions. Give me.
I don't want to drink the shake. The shake is not good. Why are you making me drink the shake? I'm not the star of this movie. It's what's her name? Dear Prudence was her sister. Come on, Mia Farrow.
I do all the standard ones like that one. I did not
do some
have.
Obscure ones. Do some ones that you don't do on stage because people just won't get them. But my radio audience will get them.
As I said,
Steve Cooper, I'm only as hip as my guests are, and now we have the very hip Carlos Azraki.
Trying to think of them, and I can't think of any to do. Billy Connolly like that, you know, way high up. You know, I must write a new song sometime. I'm trying to think. I'm racking my. The Rolodex is coming up empty.
It's all right. It's all right.
You put me under the gun, and I
put. Yeah, that's awful. You know, I put him under the gun.
When I leave,
you'll be going. Oh my God, I could have done that.
I could have. Yep, Mel Allen. We were talking about Mel Allen this week in baseball. Twib notes. There's a ground ball up the middle. Look out, Doc. That almost hit Doc Hernandez.
That's how yeah, I just,
not good. I mean,
remember how great that show was? I mean, I remember. But what was the song? Goes.
I forgot.
No, I keep going, dun, 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 that's my info, but it was like, dun, I can't think of it. But I always sat there, and I was so excited when that show came on, and I'd be sitting there, because I was such a little baseball junkie when I was a kid. I mean, I knew the stats of everybody. And then the Phillies sucked back then, and then they got good when, you know, Mike Schmidt, and they won the World Series. But I was like, I mean, I remember I was telling someone, it was so weird growing up back east for the fact that when the Phillies would play the Giants or the Padres or the Dodgers, Channel 17 it was Harry Callis, Richie Whitey Ashburn, and Merle Reese.
No, that's not a good name for
Merle,
a girl.
Merle Reese was a guy who was an Eagles announcer. It was By Som. Byram Som. That was three Phillies announcers. And I always remembered in my room, I had a little black and white TV. And when the Phillies played, I was supposed to go in bed, and I would it'd be back then, it would be like at 10:15.
That's
you know?
Right.
And I'd sit there in Channel 17, and my parents would go, "Good night, Steve." And I go, "All right." I close my door, and then I would just put that damn TV on with no sound, and I would just watch it.
Do your own announcing.
It was so great. I mean, they had Dave Cash. It's baseball. Baseball kids, watch your sports. Don't get off the video games and watch sports.
I used to listen to Bill King, a radio announcer for the Warriors. He's passed on. He used to do Raider games later on. Rick Barry, stop on a dime, hurt your gruel, over to Phil Smith, in and out, holy Toledo, the Warriors can't buy a basket. That was the first guy I imitated, Bill King. Holy Toledo, that was
really?
A big thing.
That's but the kid, I mean,
Perky jerk dribble.
It's been Rick Barry with the underhand.
Rick Barry.
The underhand.
The underhand free throw. I beat my wife and horse. She's a former college basketball player.
Where'd she play?
She played at a college in New Jersey. College of New Jersey, which was formerly Trenton State.
Trenton State changed into my sister went to Trenton State.
College of New Jersey, CJNJ?
What the hell is going on? Because I know CNJ. Glassboro State is now Rowan State. I went to Stockton State, which is now Richard Stockton, which is close.
In Absecon. I played there.
Did you really?
Cedric Garber and I did a show there in Absecon, right by Atlantic City.
Actually, technically it's Pomona.
Oh, okay.
But it's Absecon. It's right there. And it's funny because the campus is great. I mean, the campus has been launched.
Beautiful.
But you drive. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it is.
And it's like you drive down the Route 30 and you're like, and you go by Egg Harbor. Well, who would name a town Egg Harbor? It's a super name. So you play. So did you play the student arts center?
Big old student arts center, yeah.
Because that was I played there years ago when it first opened.
What are like the Falcons or the Eagles or something?
There's Ospreys.
The Ospreys.
The Ospreys. That you played at Stockton.
Yeah.
I gotta post this on Facebook because I talked to my friends from Stockton.
We played there.
My East Coast shout out. I'm doing my East Coast. I always do an East Coast shout out. This is to Paul Meehan. Paul Meehan lived in my dorm. Paul Meehan was the badass. And then he broke his neck in a car accident, but then he was fine. But he lived in Stone Harbor, New Jersey, and came down to Stockton. And it was great because when I would go live in Stone Harbor in the summers, I was considered a local because he was a local, and he was this badass who beat up some lifeguards because they peed on his mom's plants. Big story. But he lived in with me in H-Dorm. So you played at Stockton.
Richard Stockton University.
How long ago was this?
Yeah, this was last year. Very rainy that night, so it must have been around the spring, like last March.
So do you and Cedric
Yarbrough, we do college gigs. Yeah, we just played George Mason University with Tommy Davidson, and we also played Penn State.
Okay.
Penn State University. Made some Joe Pa jokes. Well, the kids today, they don't want to play football. They got to go to class.
Now, is Reno 911 coming back, or is it done?
Who knows? Right now, no. It's buried at sea like Osama.
How'd you get that gig? Just Osama, did someone contact you? I always think about Osama. I always think of him when Letterman did Oprah I think Obama, Osama.
Yeah, Osama. I got I auditioned in 2000 for what was going to be a sketch show for Ben Garand, Tom Lennon, and Kerry Kenny, and came in and I did Woody Allen, very nauseous, and I did one of those infomercial, the chamois, Michael, look at that shine, and then I did Tony Montana as a children's birthday clown. Look at you, you little fire soul. I'm going to make a surprise for you. It's a balloon animal. How do you like that? Woof woof. Yeah, it's a poodle. And I got the sketch show. We did a table read. They passed on the table read. And they said, you have a budget and you have 5 days to think of something. We're going to make fun of cops. Go home and think of a character. So we all went home and thought about respective characters. I said, I'm going to be like a Barney Five ass brick and name James Garcia and see how it works out.
So you came up with the character.
Came up with the character and the name. Yeah, we all named our characters, came up with our characters. And then they asked us, the first day on set, they asked us 15 questions. And it helped shape our characters. Okay. Who do you like on the force? Who do you hate on the force? What do you like about being a cop? You know, what's your favorite pastry?
Did you know Cedric before that? Or?
I didn't. I met him right then, and we hit it off. And the very first scene we did was in a car. They turned the cameras on, drive around. We're going to get some dash cam stuff. He turns the radio to, like, Usher, and I'm like, we have to listen to that jungle music? And then it was on. Racist cop, black partner. Good cop, black cop.
That's so funny. And the show is great.
It was fun. Very again.
And that, you know, it's funny. It's one of those things. It's one of those things that's it's just a... it's a hip show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's one of those shows you watch, and it's just, I mean, you know, with the one when the girl was dating the serial killer, and she just
Kyle
didn't
Dunigan.
Know, and it's just, it's so, I mean, that's what TV should be. It's just, it just looks like it was fun to make.
Totally organic. No overhead, no suits, no table reads. Just go out and have fun, and it'll take care of itself.
Was it all improv, or was there sketches, or you just...
They were written paragraphs of what would happen in a scene, but then all the dialogue's just improv.
Really?
You stand there, you stand there, you stand there, go. Mix them up.
That's so cool. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know what? We have 2 minutes left. Today is fly by. So
we're gonna
talk about whatever you want. And remember, people, Kubert925KYHY.com. Hit me up. Where can people? Do you have a website, or where can people find you? Find info on you, or
Carlos Alas Rock. CarlosAlasRocky.com, which I'll be changing that website soon and more diligently. And then also, you can find me on Facebook as well. And my manager tweets for me, so if you tweet away, she'll let you know where I'm going. I only tweet to let people know where I'm playing. I'm not like a tweet-o-matic guy. I'm not like Shaq.
Yeah.
Sure. Hey man, I'm in a restaurant right by you. Jackie O'Neill. But that's where they can find me. And go Giants. Go Mavericks. Go.
Are you on the Mavericks beat the Lakers?
Yeah, I'm not a Laker fan.
Yeah, you know, I became a Laker fan. It's funny. I became a Laker fan when they weren't doing that well. And I remember I bought bobbleheads at Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
And I have a Kobe.
David Fisher. And
No, it was Kobe.
Devin Bryant.
Kobe?
Devin George.
No, the bobbleheads were Kobe, Lamar Odom, Luke Walton,
Karan
Butler, and Chris Mim. I have a Chris Mim bobblehead.
Just dropped out of the league.
Yeah, that's like, what's his name? Adam Morrison. Oh, God.
Yeah, that guy. The mustache.
But he made like $13 million.
Yeah, good for him.
And he has two
number
rings.
One draft pick, wasn't he?
He was up there. He might be number one. It's crazy. But so Carlos Alazraki will be tonight
at Flappers.
At Flappers.
In Burbank.
And it's a very good comedy club. And it's right there on the corner of First and Magnolia. I believe it's a 10 o'clock show, you think?
I believe it's a 10 o'clock show. But show up at 9. Eat the food. It's good.
Yeah, the very good food. Very good food. Good, and maybe I'll stop by and
good
say
pie, right, as they say in the East Coast. Good pie.
Good slice. We got a slab. And just remember, people, every Monday, I host Bar Bingo at the Hollywood Way bar down there on
Good Barbecue, right by the Vespa dealership. Hollywood Way.
I do Bar Bingo every Monday night there. And people come and they love it.
Great food.
Yeah, it's
great.
Amazing. It's amazing food. So anyway, people, as you know, I have 10 seconds left and I always rock. I want to thank you, Carlos, for coming on.
Thank you, Steve.
It was a great time today. And I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests are. And next week I'll have Maxine Wassa coming in as my co-host, and we have some musical guests. So thank you for listening and have a good day.